So you want to quit grading so much, or maybe you just want the grading process to be more systematic, or you want it to be more meaningful for your students and for you, because you don't want to waste your time grading, do you? In this episode, I'm going to make those two things happen for you. I'm going to tell you how you can make your grading more meaningful and how you can quit grading so much. And I'm going to share a whole bunch of information from a beautifully written book, a wonderful, mind-blowing book called Pointless by Sarah M. Zerwin. This is probably one of my favorite professional development books I've ever read. Really, truly, I am not lying when I say that. Welcome to the Workshop Teacher Podcast, a podcast for teachers who are interested in trying workshop in their classrooms and teachers who are obsessed with it, like me. So let's go ahead and get started. And by the way, I am recording this podcast episode and putting it on YouTube. So if you want to join me on YouTube, go check out my YouTube channel. You can just search, you know, like Amanda Right Now on YouTube or Amanda Werner, or you can go to this podcast episode and my YouTube channel is there too. All right, so let's get to this because, you know, this is important. I don't want to waste your time here. But first, I really want to get honest with you right now. I know you know this already, but teaching during a pandemic is mind-numbing. It's tedious. It's terrible. Sitting on a screen with students or having to teach with a mask on and cleaning in between classes and not getting a break, and it's awful. It's just an awful time to be a teacher. If you have a positive attitude, then you amaze me. I resigned from teaching. I did it in the spring, this whole crazy distance learning thing. And I said, no, count me out. I'm saying no. And so now one of the things that keeps circling through my mind over and over and over again is, how can I help teachers? How can I reduce their stress? How can I ease the grading burden, the everything burden? And so I wrote this blog post and I'm publishing this podcast episode and this YouTube video, and it includes six plus tips for how to stop grading so much. But it also talks a lot about how to make it more meaningful, how to make grading more meaningful. And many of these ideas I learned from, again, this amazing book, Pointless. All right, so let's talk about the first tip. The first tip is, number one, find out what's required. How many grades do you have to input into your gradebook? A week, a month, a quarter, a semester? Are the grades supposed to be grades for mastery, or are they supposed to be for completion, or maybe a combination? How many are required? Does your school specify in their policy? If not, then don't ask. Just grade mostly on completion, seriously. Grading on mastery is challenging. And I'm going to go to this book now. Basically, what Sarah M. Zerwin talks about is that we need to involve our students more. And when we involve our students more, the responsibility becomes theirs more than it becomes the teacher. And I'm going to kind of talk specifically about how to do this in a little bit. Zerwin argues that using points to demonstrate mastery stifles growth. I agree. Learning and students' individual journeys and paths to becoming readers and writers, they're different. They vary. And points don't really account for the varying journeys that kids are on. And points don't really involve students. They put all the burden on teachers. So if you're required to input grades based on if students are mastering skills or not, there's another way to go about doing this that doesn't stifle growth and learning and puts a lot of this responsibility on students. It involves students, which is I'm all about, right? Workshop teachers, we're all about involving students. Workshop is a student-centered approach. So Zerwin demonstrates how the grade book, your grade book, you can still use your grade book system, can become a collection of data points that don't impact students' final grades, but only function as a way to reflect students and their family, reflect to students and their families how well students are keeping up with the work. But what about mastery points? You're probably wondering. Zerwin details a process of helping students choose two learning goals at the beginning of a grading period. One of these goals is a skill-based goal. One is a habit-based goal. Once students choose their goals, and she goes through this whole like week-long process of teaching kids about this. And so, you're going to have to get the book to learn about this process. I'm just doing a broad overview here. But basically, they choose their goals, and the teacher also has goals, right, for her students. And they spend the rest of the grading period or the quarter or the semester or whatever tracking their growth towards meeting those goals, writing reflections about how they're doing meeting those goals, filling out Google Forms, commenting on their own work, reflecting. These comments can be then copied from the Google Form and pasted directly into the gradebook by the teacher, so that actually like comments are written by students in the gradebook. Zerwin says that all of this makes the learning and the growth students are doing visible, whereas points don't reveal any of the learning and growth that is taking place. They're just points. They're just numbers. They don't really reflect very much. As the final weeks of the grading period draw near, students write a letter in the form of a story to the teacher. In this letter story, the student becomes the protagonist. There are antagonists and conflicts that get in the way of the student, the protagonist, reaching their chosen learning goals. There's also a resolution that includes what letter grade the student thinks they should receive. In this letter story, students also utilize these data points that you've collected for them in the grade book along the way and the comments that you've accumulated that students have written. And they use that information to inform what they think they should receive at the end of the grading period. Ultimately, the teacher has the final say. But the teacher can utilize all these data points, comments, reflections, this letter story to determine a final grade for students that takes into account so much more than points assigned with a rubric ever can. Find out what's required. Find out how you can kind of work your system, work within the system that is required by your school or your district. My next tip is to use something I like to call an all-in-one assessment tool. What if you could utilize one tool for your pre-assessment, checklist, student self-assessment, peer assessment, conferring tool, and your final rubric? What if you could utilize just one tool? Doing this could help both you and your students understand what's expected during a unit. It could give students a clear idea of what they're going to learn and be able to do by the end of the unit. And it can also give you a common language and vocabulary to discuss the skills you're teaching and your students are learning. At the beginning of your unit, the things on this all-in-one assessment tool could become the learning goals that students pick for themselves. They also are your mini lessons. One of the skills listed, again, could become that learning target, that skill-based target. But you also want students to develop habits as readers and writers, so they're going to also want to create a skill-based habit. You could even put that in your all-in-one assessment tool if you wanted. You could require students write reflections in Google Forms or in their writing notebooks, whatever, about their progress meeting this skill-based goal and these habit-based goals that are on your all-in-one assessment tool. It's also important to teach students the difference between grades that are based on completion and mastery. Like, actually teach a mini lesson on this. I have a handy poster you can use to explain this concept to students and the various assessments you do throughout a unit. And this all, and I also have a picture of this all-in-one assessment tool. So just go to amandarightnow.com, click podcast at the top, scroll down, and you'll find this episode, How to Quit Grading So Much. And you'll be able to see these two tools, the poster and the all-in-one assessment tool. Now, number three, we're on to number three. This one blew my mind. I don't even know where I heard it, but it just occurred to me one day. Maybe I was in the shower. I don't know. You know how you get like these brilliant ideas when you're like in the shower? I don't know if you do. I do. So here's this brilliant idea. Only grade 1 to 3 skills on your all-in-one assessment tool. Just because you have 10 skills listed on a rubric doesn't mean you have to grade all of them. So I have some ideas about what skills you might choose to grade rather than trying to grade all of the skills. You could grade the skills students struggled with when they took your pre-assessment. You know, when you start a unit, you always pre-assess students to find out how well they do this type of writing or how well they can participate in a discussion if you're in a reading unit or how well they can annotate a short story if you're in a reading unit. So you could just grade the skills students were really struggling with that pre-assessment. You could grade the skills students choose as their individual skill-based goal for that grading period at the beginning of the unit. You could ask students to pick a skill they feel they did particularly well in and grade that. You just have students highlight it or star it on the rubric on the all-in-one assessment tool. Or you could do kind of a combination of these ideas. Maybe you're wondering, well, how can only grading 1 to 3 skills on a rubric when I have 10 skills listed add up to enough points for a final end of the year unit evaluation? All you have to do is double the points. Like, that's all you have to do. So change the 4, if you have a 4 on your rubric, to be worth 40. Change a 3 to be worth 30. You could weight the final writing piece more than the other smaller assignments and reflections you had students do throughout the unit that are more completion-based. These other assignments could include things like pre-assessments, brainstorms, drafts, providing peer feedback, participating in conferences with the teacher. These should all be completion grades. And completion grades are so much easier to do than mastery grades. Number 4, fourth tip, involve students. So I love this quote from Pointless, an English teacher's guide to more meaningful grading. Students should be the single most important users of classroom data about their learning. They should know for themselves what they know, what they need to learn, and how they are progressing. Do your students know this information? So, how do we involve our students in the grading process more? We should involve students not only because it's important for them to reflect on their learning, but also to ease the grading burden of teachers. Here are a few of my ideas for how to involve students. Have students self-assess using your all-in-one assessment tool at the beginning of your unit based on the pre-assessment that they did. Like if they're going to crank out an informational article, have them assess themselves using your all-in-one assessment tool and just grade this based on completion. You're not going to grade how they did on a pre-assessment based on mastery. That would be mean, don't you think? That would be so mean. And then you could also have students assess themselves at the end of a unit. How do they do? Compare their assessment of themselves at the beginning to the assessment they did of themselves at the end. You could use Google Doc comments feature to have students highlight and comment where they demonstrate the skills from the all-in-one assessment tool in their writing. I love doing this because then you can just skim students' papers. You don't necessarily have to read the whole thing. Tell students to use the suggesting mode in Google Docs when revising so you can visually see the changes that were made. Allow opportunities for students to reflect on what they're learning and obstacles they're facing and how they plan to move forward with their learning goals. Okay, my sixth tip, use Google Forms. I love Google Forms, and there's a really, really helpful video that you should check out on this episode, amandarightnow.com podcast. Go to this episode. Google Forms can grade for you and provide students instant feedback. And this video I created teaches you how to do this. And they can allow students to see how they did comprehending books that they're reading. It also allows students to comment and reflect on how they're doing. So if you just create like a paragraph type of answers, you can create multiple choice questions or paragraph questions. All of this information can be displayed on a spreadsheet, which I also show you in this video. There are two brilliant ideas for using Google Forms that I found from Pointless. This book, Pointless. I've talked about it. Are you going to get it yet? Are you going to get it? So here are the ideas. The first idea is to provide short answer or paragraph questions in the Google form. These questions can ask students to write reflections about how they're doing with whatever concept you've been teaching. Once students have filled this out, you can copy and paste student answers from the Google form straight into the comments section of your gradebook. This way, families and students can see how students are doing in their own words. I love this idea. The second brilliant idea I found in Pointless was to use Google Forms for reading quizzes and grade these on completion, not mastery. So students get full credit for just doing the quiz. Instead of grading quizzes on mastery, set up your quiz to allow students to see their score instantly after taking the quiz. The video I created explains how to do this. Then have students write a reflection about why they think they missed the questions that they missed and what they will be doing going forward to make sure they're comprehending the book or story in the future. I just feel like this makes students much more honest about how they're doing, right? If you are grading their quizzes on mastery, it's just really defeating and deflating when you don't do very well. And you're not going to learn from it. You're just going to learn, you know, and kids cheat. So, and especially right now online, like, just grade it on completion and then have students reflect on how they did and what they're going to do going forward to improve their score next time. Yes. Okay. My last tip, actually, it's not my last tip, but this is my sixth tip. Limit grades for mastery. And I've already said this, but I want to just like hammer it in your head. Grading based on completion is simple. It only involves checking if students did the work. Grading for mastery is much more complex and takes time. Grading for mastery should require involving students in the process much more. So here are some reading and writing assignments that you might consider grading based on completion, not mastery. Brainstorming, drafting, reading responses, reflections, quick writes, showing up for a conference, discussions, participating in peer conferences. Consider only grading the following on mastery. Skills listed on your rubric or all-in-one assessment tool, the revision process, final reflections written by students about their goals or their learning journey. Okay, those are my six tips, but I have some bonus ideas for you. Students should be writing and reading much more than you are able to grade. Don't comment in the margins of students' papers. I got that idea from Pointless. Doing so takes too long and is often tedious. And it's just like, you know, how do you choose what to comment on? It's hard. So just don't do it. Don't do it in the margins. Instead, write a short paragraph at the end of the final paper after you've read the whole thing. Don't write anything until the end. And then just provide one or two tips for the revision process to the students. You don't have to read every word that students write. Skimming is okay, especially if you're only grading 1 to 2 skills on your rubric and you're having students highlight the skills that they demonstrated. And my last bonus tip, I love this one. Consider not grading Socratic seminars or discussions in general. This way, students become more willing to have meaningful conversations and take risks in those conversations. Grade these discussions based on participation and completion. Give all students full credit, even if they only participated by observing and taking notes. I also have some related blog posts on this blog post, how I cut my grading time by 10 hours. Ooh, that one's really good. 13 creative assessment ideas for reading, writing, speaking, and listening, and 10 ways to make grading easier. You think I like this topic? I do. Okay, so here are some of my final thoughts. Grading can be simple and it can be more meaningful. All English teachers have the ability to work within their school's required policy. We just need to get creative and think out of the box. Hopefully, this episode has helped you do just that. And also, this book can help too, Pointless. I also have this extra video that you can watch that kind of captures all of this in this blog post. And yeah, I hope you enjoyed this. I've made two videos to go with this blog post. Oh my goodness, how crazy am I? I just think this topic's really important, and I hope you got a lot out of this episode. Okay, share it if you did. Bye.